university professor. I don't think I mentioned that before, but I was actually a professor of disability studies before I became severely disabled with a neurologic disability. And I was also a senior research fellow with the Canadian Institutes of Health Research. So I'm really interested in the health benefits and of this practice. So we would welcome a partnership with a university student. And I should say, these practices, they support. You know, I have a my daughter is in her third year of biomedical science, and she knows this. When you spend this mindful time in nature, you can increase your capacity to pay attention. You can increase your capacity to remember. There are definite neurocognitive benefits in addition to mood, which of course intersect, right? They all interrelate, and your physical well-being. So you're less likely, you know, in theory, I mean, because we know that it supports immune function, in theory, you can sustain a healthier body as well. So it's great for university students.
Well, you said you were happy when you found a friend that had something that you could work with. What is the thing that you're most passionate about with this program?
I guess there's two areas. It's hard to narrow down, but the most important one is community and feeling like I belong. And just to continue on what you'd asked me before, to be able to go somewhere and be exactly who you are is profound. You know,
Yes.
that is what makes you belong, really. That is the central aspect of belonging. And I was looking for a community. And I didn't know what Kari was up to, but I know that she's always interested in building community. And I found community there. And all the people that Kari mentioned who come to, you know, do help you, a naturopath or someone who's coming to talk about breathing and meditation. These people don't go away because they want to stay. So this community, even though we were small, and I think that's a great thing, people really want to stay. I think that's amazing. Every session we see people who come back, and they come back and they come back just for the, I'm not talking about the training, I'm talking about the actual program. And that is, to me, the best part. I think that's the best thing for my health right now, especially after the pandemic.
And I think you recorded some of the responses people had after that 1.5 hour program.
I did, yeah.
How did you go about, and you were doing a survey as well, to see whether people who experienced it by being physically on the property and people who experienced it through Zoom or other virtual media, were you surprised at the response that you got?
Maybe we could pass that to Kim because she was one of the research assistants on that project.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, I did a lot of the surveys, and I guess what it wasn't surprising, but it really felt great to know that the responses were really positive, and mostly, and there was beautiful responses about being in community because a lot of the people coming into the sessions have different abilities and are dealing with different types of chronic illnesses. And a lot of times I heard that, you know, that meant so much to be in a community and not feel odd or ignored in any way, that they were embraced, and to see people around them being non-judgmental and compassionate really meant a lot. Also, things like physical pain and discomfort levels reduced significantly right after the program, right after they had participated in the program. So that was huge. And I think every single person I surveyed said that they would be coming back to another program because it meant so much to them. And that's what Laura was talking about as well, was it really brings you in. And a lot of people mentioned afterwards that just seeing nature, taking time to look at nature in a different way in their daily life, even if it was just taking a break from the computer and looking over at their plant for a few minutes and getting drawn into the colors and the textures of green and whatever is in front of them. Just giving that rest and that break, especially when we've been in a pandemic where we're almost, we've been in computer land, you know, for hours and hours every day, to get that break away from it meant so much to so many people, and just gave them reminders of, oh yeah, yeah, I do like to get out. I do like to garden. I can just bring a little bit of contemplation to it, and it deepens and enriches their lives that much more. So quite interesting. The surveys were fascinating, and
yeah, unlike a lot of surveys that people ask people to take part in after something, I was impressed by the number of people that made comments. We're going to hear a few of those.
Oh, yeah, Kim.
Well, I would just like to say I sort of entered into this not knowing what I was doing. And I have to say that no one will have any regrets taking this course. One thing I love about it is it's very, very much based on your experience rather than all the academic stuff. In the beginning, I was writing down notes all the time, trying to memorize things, and that's not what this is about. It really is about your own personal experience. And regardless of what you do with the course, you will never regret all the things that you learned. It's amazing. It's really opened my perspective on everything and the planet and all living beings.
Thank you, Kim. That's nice. And I should say, you know, speaking of the beings, all living beings, one of our two primary textbooks is by Robin Wall Kimmerer, Braiding Sweetgrass. And so we do, as we learn and explore Indigenous philosophy, we learn these different ways that language can shape the way we experience nature and frame nature, for example, and really, really go through like a personal journey of shifting perspectives and ways of being in nature, but also just ways of being. I see Laurel nodding. Yeah, and Erin has her hand up.
Those of you who are listening who haven't gone through it, I'm sure you have questions, and I hesitated to jump in, but my enthusiasm is such as I just had to say something. And this program came along at the right time for me. I am convinced that each person who's listening has a timeline, and there's a reason if this is right for you. My other point that I'd like to make is I live on the edge of Algonquin Park, and there's a visitor's bookstore here. And we were just talking about this approach of wanting to connect to something larger through nature is exploding. And I think we have an opportunity here to be part of something that is really special. And there's lots of different ways that you can approach it. But my testimonial would be that I have not experienced, and I have gone to other programs, one that combines the different perspectives that Kari and David have put together. So I would tell you that whatever's happening in your life and whatever you happen to enjoy around you is going to make a really special experience. That's it.
Thank you, Erin. Linda? Oh.
Just add to that is that I was hiking at Pacific Spirit Park this summer at UBC, and they often echo hikes. So it's really spreading all over the world that our ecology and our nature are really important. And just to add to what Carrie said is that you don't only apply these principles to nature, but to your whole life. Like in Robin's book, one of the principles is don't take more than you need. So when you go grocery shopping, do I really need 6 onions? No, I only need 2, so I should only take 2. And so it spreads into your everyday life as well.
And, you know, as Erin said, it is exploding worldwide. There are many different approaches. And ours, as far as I can tell, it's the only one. I mean, that's part of the reason why Harriet and I connected, is this interest in how do we make nature connection accessible and inclusive. And this is not, unfortunately, happening in some of the training programs that I've been having had experience with. There wasn't the interest, there wasn't the inclination. And then there's also the factor of other programs, you know, flying everybody to Costa Rica to do their 6-month training, and the ecological footprint of that model, that also Dave and I find problematic. So we really try, we live off grid, we collect rainwater, we melt snow. This is our life. We don't push our lifestyle onto anybody else, but we try to share our deep concern and reverence for the natural world. And that it is our pleasure and joy to live in the beautiful way that we do, that is sometimes taxing and sometimes inconvenient, but it is a joy because it's coming from a place of love and care and compassion to all beings.
Now, I want to ask you about the parks. Yesterday, you made a presentation with the parks. Could you tell me a bit more about what is formally now going on with the Parks Department in connection to eco wisdom?
Kim, do you want to answer? Yeah, do you want to go
ahead? Sure. It was, I don't have the thing in front of me at the moment. It was a thing to access, it was an Accessible Parks Canada conference, and they are looking into how to make parks, national parks across Canada, more accessible by 2040. And so they're in the middle of a conference right now. They've been doing it the last few days and have had different people speak to them about ideas of how to make things more accessible, what's important for people with disabilities, what would make it easier for people to access different types of national parks. And when we were speaking yesterday, we talked about the importance of nature in our lives and what that does for our health, and how during the pandemic so many people took part in parks and, you know, kind of almost rediscovered nature, because during lockdown there wasn't that much else to do, really. But a lot of different types of populations didn't have as easy access to those spaces. And that includes people living in poverty, and that disproportionately includes people living with disabilities or chronic illnesses, new immigrants, those who identify as Black, Indigenous, or people of color. And to not have access to parks is an equity issue, especially when we're talking about health. So I'll let Kari take it on from there.
I think, you know, that was one of our main points, was that, you know, it is so important. And then we moved into talking about our work, our community-based projects, which is, and we've been fortunate enough to get, you know, a few grants here and there from TD Park People, and then also the Canada Healthy Communities Initiative grant to help us really develop and refine this model for both the programming, the 2.5 hour programming, and also the 6 month training. And our, and both are accessible or inclusive. Like, we're really trying to make it available for people who live with disability or chronic illness or age-related challenges. So we moved actually into recommending that parks have these little side trails, because often we have like the main trail and you've got bicycles and you've got people who are running and you've got people maybe who are using a cane who don't have great balance. You know, you've got people, you know, I have issues with overstimulation. So having lots of people like loud, you know, music or whatever, it's really challenging. So having these little side trails that are designed specifically for forest bathing. This is what we ended up, you know, concluding, is that this is one of the things that would make things more accessible, because it's great to go for a walk, but you don't want to be knocked over by a bike, and you want to be able to get right up to the edge of the water of a pond or a stream, right? And so the sound of water, for example, calms the central nervous system. We know that the parasympathetic nervous system is activated by sounds of birds, water, wind. And so when we can get away from the busyness into these little pod areas that are quiet, where we can have multi-sensory experiences, we can nurture ourselves and build that resiliency. And find peace and quiet. So that was one of the things that we talked about at the end of the talk. Yeah.
And who was the sponsor for that program that still that still has a conference going on today?
It's part of a KITE research program. And yeah, you can find more information on their website, which is Accessible Parks Canada. And I believe the program will be recorded, or most of the conference presentations will be recorded and posted at some point on their website. Yeah.
Yes, we might have them on or air parts of that, their recordings, because I think it's very interesting. The icon for trails is often a person on a bike. You don't really think of that, you know, these side trails, there are people with walkers, canes, a number of different devices that need to feel welcome to be on the trail, and also to be safe while they're going on a smaller trail.
Could I add something here, Charlotte?
Certainly.
Yes, just to what you're saying there, my mother's 94, and, you know, she's using a walker, and I would not take her somewhere busy. She would just feel so vulnerable, and that would just take everything away from the benefits, obviously. But someone mentioned at the conference, and I don't think it was our group, but I was listening to another speaker at the conference, Neufeld, yeah, Jen, I can't remember her first name. Anyway, and just talking about, you know, we know how much the pandemic highlighted the discriminatory policies and realities for people. People who had less had even less, you know, it was just, you know, it just showed everything up. And I just think she gave the example, because I know that, you know, people with disabilities, if for instance, don't have a lot of money and it's going to be difficult to do this or that. But she was really very specific about people who were people were nervous to take public transit. So that was one reason that they couldn't get into nature. So because you think, well, why would it be any different? But that was one really solid, concrete reason that people were even further limited. I see Carrie has something to say. No, that's good, because I knew you would.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, Laura, I think that was actually part of our presentation.
Okay. Because Kim said it. I was going to say, yeah. I'm thinking, was it Kim or not? Yeah. Could you say it again? I thought that was so important.
But yeah, that was something, a point that we had heard And so we thought it was important to put it into the presentation. There was one other thing I wanted to mention, Charlotte, and that is that one of our guest speakers for the training is a senior, and she's a caregiver for her husband who's been undergoing cancer treatment. So, you know, she has some minor, you know, age-related health issues, but she is very involved in caregiving, which is a very demanding role. And she has come repeatedly to these programs that we offer, the 2.5-hour programs. And she's a gardener. She loves her plants. And every summer she would have a garden in her backyard. And this last winter, she created an indoor garden. And she used her nature connection practices, mindful nature connection practices, to go deeply into her connection with her indoor houseplants. And it became this resource. And every time she walked by this table with all these collection of plants, she would pause, she would reach out and touch a leaf. She would look at the way the light would come in the window and sort of illuminate some of the color in the leaf. And so she came as a guest educator to the training program and shared her knowledge and experience of using indoor forest bathing, indoor mindful nature connection as a way to resource herself, given her demanding caregiving responsibilities. And she's a delight. We just love her.
Well, we hear the word accessible and inclusive a lot. In this program, you demonstrated so many ways that it is inclusive. Programs, too, that have something in it for me, caregivers are caring a lot. And the fact that yours has something that helps the caregiver, something as simple as having that plant to stop and rather than seeing the plant, being able to know a mindfulness exercise to do with it, or being able to go outside and just looking at spotting a tree. I really hadn't thought about, you know, how people say, that's my person, that's my team. So now when I walk in, that's my tree. Yeah, that's my flower. So it is wonderful that you spent this time with me. We'll have to do a second program because you've given so much information. I'm sure whetted a lot of people's appetite about learning about forest bathing. I thought, that's not going out. You know, I pictured a nudist beach when you said forest bathing, and it's so much more. And it's something that at this time, when we've had to be 6 degrees apart, everything is talked about staying 2 feet apart or 6 feet apart or two, these arms stretched out, you're showing something of arms brought in. I'm just reading a book called Lovability, and the person is talking about one of the signs of a healthy community is hugs. And so you talk about hugging a tree, hugging a plant, but also hugging a person. So I'm just thankful for all the information that you've shared. I want to get your numbers said again where people could learn about the 2-hour programs as well as learn about the training if they want to be considered as a candidate for the training. And without further ado, I'm Sister C. This has been Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon. You'll hear us again next week at 10. Before I say that, let me have Carrie say again the places where you can connect with Echo. Echo Health.
You can reach us at info@ecowisdom.ca. And we also have a website, and it's www.ecowisdom.ca. And on the website, you'll see information under services. Under services, you will find a whole lot of information about our training program. And we do actually have scholarships for people who are looking to use this training for social and environmental justice work.
Okay. And so just in emailing you, they could inquire on how do you apply for one of those scholarships.
Of course, yes.
And if a company, any company that's listening that says, hey, that sounds like something great, how can I get involved? They are welcoming additional sponsors and funders for scholarships. So just get on that phone or get on the internet and contact them.
We have some awesome people, candidates who are doing, that have ideas about using this with people who are home insecure, people with addiction issues, people who are in vulnerable populations, and they themselves don't have a lot of resources. So then we end up trying to find a sponsor or trying to find a grant, which is, as you can imagine, quite a bit of work. So if there is anybody out there, a park association or a company or anyone who wants to sponsor, we do have one full scholarship for somebody with a disability in honor of a member of our team who passed away. But doing something like that really would fuel all kinds of repercussions at the community-based level for in terms of service. And that service is really about, ultimately about what we're about is service. And we often hear in our final circle people talking about the belonging piece and the love and the feeling like you're just being held by nature, but also by one another.
Right. Something that you hoped for, but you find it actually exists. It really is happening in my lifetime. And it also contributes to that goal that's part of the Powered by Age, creating an age-friendly city. Age-friendly cities where people from 8 to 80 feel like they have a part in decision-making and that there's some activity or something that they can do and enjoy life. So thank you so much for spending time to talk, Kim Dunlop, Carrie Grove, and Laurel Goodings.
Thank you so much, Charlotte, for having us here today. It's just been a delight.
This is your own Sister C, Charlotte Drill, thanking you for spending time with us this morning, hearing about eco-wisdom, forest bathing, and ways that we can share accessible nature well-being. My guests were Dr. Carrie Crowe, Laurel Goodings, and Kim Dunlop. See you again next week at 10, but when people ask me what time it is, I always say it's love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words bassoon. Love time, poem time. Time for poems, poets and singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time. Time for you to reveal to me. Unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, love time, poem time. Times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time. Times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Time for poems, poets, singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me. Unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Love time.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station, broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Polygon Salon Gallery presents Chester Fields, an initiative that encourages the development of visionary young photographers, giving them an opportunity to show their work on a professional platform. From August 12th to September 10th, you can see photographic art produced by teen artists from across the region, which responds to the theme, Unsung. All submittals are reviewed by a jury of artists and arts professionals who select works to be shown in both virtual and on-site exhibitions. To learn more about this exhibition, visit thepolygon.ca.